This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
The mooch is cooked. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Tuesday, August 1st. Glad you could be with us. And here's what we have for you this hour.
Anthony Scaramucci has been removed as White House Communications Director. It was one of the first tasks for new Chief of Staff John Kelly.
Reuters is reporting that North Korea can now reach much of the U.S. with its missiles, but is that the intent?
The Trump administration has hit the leader of Venezuela with sanctions after what it calls a sham vote.
And the bipartisan group in the House that thinks it has a way forward for health insurance reform.
Well, there's this group called the Problem Solvers Caucus. It's made up of an roughly equal number of Democrats and Republicans, and they're trying to have an influence in this currently, you know, split Congress by saying, when we reach an agreement among ourselves on something, we commit that we'll vote as a block.
Herb Jackson from USA Today on the Problem Solvers Caucus. He's here later in the hour. The White House communications director is out after just 10 days on the job. Anthony Scaramucci was removed yesterday at the urging of the new chief of staff, retired General John Kelly, in one of his first official acts in the job. Mr. Scaramucci's ouster came 4 days after the New Yorker magazine published an interview with him in which he attacked other top staffers in the White House with a stream of expletives. White House spokeswoman Sarah Sanders.
The president certainly felt that Anthony's comments were inappropriate for a person in that position. And he didn't want to burden General Kelly also with that line of succession.
The Wall Street Journal says Mr. Kelly, a former Marine Corps general, urged the 53-year-old hedge fund founder to resign during a one-on-one meeting yesterday morning. Mr. Scaramucci was the administration's second official communications director. Mr. Dubke, or rather Mike Dubke, who previously held the post, resigned back in May. Well, President Trump has sworn in Marine General John Kelly as his new chief of staff.
I have no doubt that he will be an absolutely superb chief of staff.
President predicted Mr. Kelly, his former Homeland Security Secretary, would go down in history as one of the greatest chiefs of staff ever. More from Jordan Fabian, White House correspondent at The Hill. Jordan, what's ahead for him?
John Kelly, the new White House chief of staff, is coming over from the Homeland Security Department, but now he faces a much more daunting mission, which is imposing order and discipline on a White House that's been racked by chaos. So his first order of business is going to be to establish some kind of system here where staffers are reporting to him, where he can impose control over the president's schedule, and also try to get the president, if he can, to cut down on some of his impulses, including his use of social media, which is often undercut the White House message of the day or message of the week. So a long list of things for Secretary Kelly to do in his new job.
Geez, all right. So as you point out, he's a retired four-star Marine general. So he'd know a thing about discipline. Question is, can he impose it?
That's right. And, John Kelly is someone who seems to have earned the president's respect. And that's not something that you would say about Reince Priebus, the former chief of staff. The president publicly humiliated him a few times, didn't really respect him, didn't empower him to, do the things that a traditional chief of staff does, which is have control over who gets access to the Oval Office, who is advising the president on key issues, and the White House message. Those are all powers that Reince Priebus was never able to get. And so the big question for John Kelly is, can he harness the respect that he has from the president to get him to empower him in that way and to impose a traditional structure here that's worked for past presidents?
Does you think that General Kelly knows what he's getting into? I heard Corey Lewandowski say on one of the Sunday talk shows that if you think you're going to change Donald Trump, then you don't know Donald Trump.
That's right. It's going to be interesting to see if Kelly even tries to change Donald Trump, if he's going to even make an attempt to convince the president to curb his tweeting and to, you know, stop, you know, speaking off the cuff so often. He might not try to do that. He might try to impose order in other ways, maybe, you know, through the scheduling process, through who's giving advice to the president. So, look, it's going to be interesting for him. You know, he's a long career in the military, but he doesn't really have a lot of experience in politics. And you look at back at past chiefs of staff, most of them have been political operators, people who have experience in Washington, dealing with Congress, dealing with, you know, campaigns, et cetera. So a different sort of person in this role. But obviously, this is a different kind of president. So not surprising in that respect.
We're speaking with Jordan Fabian, White House correspondent at The Hill, talking about President Trump's new chief of staff, General John Kelly. All right. So the word chaos has been used to describe the Trump administration in its first 6 months. But the president Monday morning said that's not the case.
Right. Yeah, the president put up a tweet and pointing out some of the positive things that have happened over the past 6 months, you know, pointing to a stock market rally, pointing to positive economic indicators. But look, that's all well and good, but it doesn't erase the fact that there is chaos in this White House. This White House has been plagued by chaos. You have different staff members who have been feuding with each other, both publicly and privately, you know, trying to wrest power from one another. You have a White House that has struggled to maintain a message on a single issue like health care. You have a White House that doesn't have any major legislative achievements, and meanwhile, they're dealing with a Russia investigation that's only widening in scope. So, really, there's a lot of problems there that John Kelly has on his plate, and I think if he's honest with himself, he'll recognize that there is chaos and try to come up with a way to end that chaos and post some order around here.
Thanks, Jordan. Jordan Fabian, White House correspondent at The Hill. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday. The Trump administration is hitting Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro with financial sanctions in the wake of a weekend election being called a sham that gave the country's ruling party virtually unlimited powers. The sanctions follow through on a U.S. threat to take action against Mr. Maduro and his socialist government if they went ahead with Sunday's election. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin told reporters at yesterday's White House briefing that Mr. Maduro's dream is to become a dictator.
As a result of today's sanctions, all assets of Maduro subject to U.S. jurisdiction are frozen, and U.S. persons are prohibited from dealing with him.
The monetary impact of the sanctions wasn't immediately clear, as Mr. Maduro's holdings in U.S. jurisdictions, if he has any, were not publicized. However, imposing sanctions on a head of state is rare and can be symbolically powerful, leading other countries to similarly shun such a leader. Reuters is reporting that North Korea's latest test of an intercontinental ballistic missile has shown that Pyongyang may now be able to reach most of the continental U.S., not just portions of the West Coast, like Alaska. North Korea said on Saturday it had conducted another successful test of an ICBM that proved its ability to strike America's mainland. The state-run news agency says North Korean leader Kim Jong-un called it a stern warning to the United States that it would not be safe from destruction if it tried to attack. Broad reaction from President Trump.
We have some interesting situations that we'll handle. North Korea, Middle East, lots of problems that we inherited from previous administrations, but we'll take care of them.
Reuters says it's been told by U.S. officials that Mr. Kim's goal of developing a nuclear-capable ICBM is to deter any attack on his country and gain international legitimacy, not to launch an attack. The Pentagon declined to comment on the U.S. assessment of the missile launch. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to President Trump's new chief of staff, John Kelly, asserted his authority on his first day in the White House by firing communications director Anthony Scaramucci just 10 days after he was hired. Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders made the announcement yesterday afternoon.
He does not have a role at this time in the Trump administration.
Scaramucci was forced out of his post with the blessing of the president just days after unloading a profanity-laced tirade against other members of the president's staff, including the now-fired Reince Priebus and Stephen Bannon, the chief White House strategist. President Trump's threat to stop billions of dollars in government payments to insurers and force the collapse of Obamacare could put the government in a tricky legal situation. Legal experts say he'd be handing insurers a solid court case while undermining his own leverage to compel Democrats to negotiate, especially if premiums jump by 20% as expected after such a move. The president has been threatening to stop payments that reimburse insurers for providing required financial assistance to low-income consumers, reducing their co-pays and deductibles. The political defiance that made Joe Arpaio popular as Metro Phoenix's sheriff of 24 years has ultimately led to his downfall, as he was convicted of a crime for ignoring a court order to stop traffic patrols that targeted immigrants. The TV interviews and news releases that the lawman used over the years to promote his immigration crackdowns came back to bite him. The judge who found him guilty of misdemeanor contempt of court cited comments Arpaio made about keeping up the patrols, even though he was not allowed to do so. Sam Shepard, the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, Oscar-winning actor, and celebrated author whose plays chronicled the explosive fault lines of family and masculinity in the West, has died at the age of 73. A family spokesman says Shepard died last week at his home in Kentucky from complications related to Lou Gehrig's disease. And HBO says hackers have stolen upcoming programming. The Time Warner unit declined to comment on the specific programming taking, but reports indicate the hack included a script for the unaired episode of the hit fantasy show Game of Thrones, and Entertainment Weekly reports that hackers stole 1.5 terabytes of data and had already posted online unbroadcast episodes of Ballers and Room 104.
Wow. 1.5 terabytes.
I don't know what that means.
That's like a, I don't know.
It's a lot.
40 billion songs or something like that. Thanks, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Tuesday. The latest example of how quickly retailers can change their loyalty programs, Target and its experimental one. More from MarketWatch reporter Maria LaMagna. Maria, what are you seeing?
I'm seeing a lot of conversation online about Target. I guess what's happening with them is that they're merging the app that they previously had, which was called Cartwheel, which a lot of consumers really liked. And they're actually merging it in with their standard Target app. So a lot of people were worried and concerned that it's actually going away. But what is happening is that they're sort of merging the two together. And at the same time, they're getting rid of a little pilot program that they were trying called Cartwheel Perks. So it's a little confusing because they're getting rid of one thing and then completely merging two apps together. And basically, consumers are just kind of stressed because a lot of people love Cartwheel and they're just concerned that it's going away.
Mm. All right, so why is this happening? Why is Target doing this?
So what they said is that they were basically just collecting data during the time that some people were trying the pilot program, and they kind of found out what consumers liked and didn't, and their answer to that is that, you know, they're moving toward the direction that people actually like, and, you know, that they're doing something that's good. But I think any time that you're mixing something up and changing someone's habits, it's always hard. And I think, you know, the people that were trying out the program, maybe some of them liked it and are sad that it's going away. But yeah, Target is basically saying, you know, we're collecting data and feedback on our customers and what they say goes, and, you know, they didn't really like this new program, so we're not going to go forward with it.
Interesting. All right, so they're not the only company, obviously, that has disappointed customers with some sort of loyalty program change, right?
Right. So there's some really famous examples. Last year, Starbucks changed its program, which was a really big deal because so many people go to Starbucks daily or nearly daily. And they were trying to change, you know, how you get the stars, which change your loyalty status within the app. And when that happened, people were really upset. And Chase actually had a similar example where, you know, slightly different, but they were advertising this huge sign-up bonus for their Chase Sapphire Reserve credit card. And they ended up changing it more recently because they weren't able to sustain it. It was too expensive. And so you do see these major, major brands that have super loyal customers doing these things sometimes. And every time it happens, it ends up having sort of a vocal backlash because people get so excited about the loyalty programs. And, you know, there's even this small sector of people who try to game the system and try to get as much out of it as they possibly can. And those people end up being really upset when it changes because then it throws off their whole strategy.
Right. How does it get too expensive for a company? It's not like they're handing out dollar bills. What's actually happening for them?
Right. So it depends on the program, definitely. But sometimes the problem is that people get too good at understanding how to use it. And, you know, I think you're kind of making a gamble when you are a company that's starting a program like this, because you're hoping that, you know, some people are probably not going to take as much advantage as others. And I think in the last couple of years, we've really seen this rise in the amount of information that's available online about these programs. And people are getting really, really good at understanding how to use them and how to get the most bang for their buck. So that's sometimes why it becomes expensive, because when customers, you know, are really taking full advantage, or a small group of customers are taking super, super, you know, advantage of everything that's available, then the company is like, okay, wait, we're actually not making enough money on this.
It's MarketWatch reporter Maria LaMagna, who's based in New York. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday, August 1st. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: as General John Kelly is sworn in as Chief of Staff, Anthony Scaramucci is shown the door as White House Communications Director. New report says North Korea can reach much of the U.S. with its missiles. Los Angeles will have to wait an extra 4 years, but will host the 2028 Summer Olympics. The U.S. hits Venezuela's leader with sanctions. Uber is adjusting employee salaries today to address its gender pay gap. And the four-year-old who asked police to check for monsters in her new home. That story in about 20 minutes. With the House on recess and the Senate's leader saying it's time to move on, a bipartisan group of more than 40 House members now says that Congress needs to act quickly to stabilize the individual health insurance market. Their five-point plan was announced yesterday. Details from Herb Jackson, Washington correspondent for The Bergen Record in New Jersey, part of the USA Today network. Herb, what's up here?
Well, there's this group called the Problem Solvers Caucus. It's made up of an roughly equal number of Democrats and Republicans, and they're trying to have an influence in this currently, you know, split Congress by saying, when we reach an agreement among ourselves on something, we'll vote as a block. And, you know, 40 votes in the House coming from both sides could be a significant block that leadership in both sides would want to take into account. So they've been meeting on health care. They put out a statement sort of trying to cut the baby in half on health care. They abandoned the idea of repeal, which, you know, there were several of the Republicans who were in this group who voted for the bill back in early May that would have repealed and replaced. But they're now calling for a series of steps, one of which is to make mandatory and put in the appropriations process these payments that insurance companies get. They're called cost-sharing reduction payments. And this has become a sort of political football in this debate. President Trump has said, I'm going to get rid of these payments to sort of hasten an Obamacare crisis, to make the Democrats come to the table and negotiate with us. This is now a group of congressmen on both sides of the aisle saying, no, we're going to actually make these mandatory, put them in the appropriations process. But the Democrats are also giving up some things. They are agreeing to repeal the medical device tax. They are saying that there should be more relaxed regulations that would allow for states to reach agreements with each other and allow for the sale of insurance plans across state lines, which is sort of a commonly mentioned solution that Republicans often say will increase competition and will drive down costs. And they also want to lower, change the employer mandate. Right now, companies that have fewer than 50 or more employees have to provide health insurance for their workers and their full-time workers. This would change that to a 500 employee threshold, so a lot of small business would now no longer be covered by the mandate.
Mm. We're speaking with Herb Jackson, Washington correspondent for The Record in Northern New Jersey, part of the USA Today network, and he's written a piece entitled Bipartisan House Group, Stabilize Healthcare Markets with Funding, Less Regulation. He's talking about a group called the Problem Solvers Caucus. All right, so as you point out, there are 40 House members. That's close to 10%. That's a big number.
It's about a fifth of what you need to pass a bill. Oh, you need, 211, 212 to pass a bill.
Yeah, even better explained. So what's the likelihood then that this could get done or that they have that kind of power?
Well, it's not really been proven yet. It's a strange world right now. You know, the power of leadership in the Congress from the parties has been declining steadily with the growth of super PACs and things like that. This is a new world that we're seeing right now. So we haven't seen this kind of influence play out yet. Usually leaders try to be the ones, that's Nancy Pelosi and Paul Ryan want to be the ones speaking for the Republicans and the Democrats. They don't want their members freelancing with each other, but we already saw with the health care bill that this one group called the Freedom Caucus, which is the far right Republicans, were able as a block almost to kill the first plan that Ryan's leadership put out by not getting on board. So we could see this happening, but the fact of the matter is it's July 31st, or it's coming to the end of July. The House is out of session until after Labor Day right now. The Senate is in for this week only, and they will be gone then for the rest of August. So nothing's really going to be happening in Congress for the next couple of weeks. This could be something that, if you want to be cynical, these members now have that they can go out and tell their constituents as they go around around their districts during the recess.
Thanks, Herb. Herb Jackson, Washington correspondent at the Bergen Record in New Jersey. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter, too, @GordonDeal. Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we all know by now that now former White House Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci is going to have some free time on his hands after being let go by President Trump yesterday. The good news is he's still alive. In the ultimate case of adding insult to injury, Harvard Law School has apologized for erroneously listing him as dead in a new alumni directory. Scaramucci is a 1989 graduate of the school. A directory mailed to alumni this week included an asterisk by his name indicating that he had died. A statement from the law school apologizes for the error and says it will be corrected in future editions, but did not provide an explanation for the error. The directory is published every 5 years and is available only to Harvard Law alumni.
Mm.
Now, of course, on the surface, you're like, oh, this must be some sort of political statement, but this is a printed catalog of some kind that, is only done every 5 years.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that it was just updated and quickly sent out last week.
Right.
Right? He only had the job for 10 days, so yeah. It would have been really hard for them to do this on purpose, but it is an interesting coincidence. Let's put it that way.
Is it possible that they were just referencing his political career as being dead?
Right.
Not necessarily he himself.
Right. Perhaps. And again, because again, this had to have been printed a while ago.
Right.
Perhaps they were just predicting the future. Who knows?
Death listed as being July 2017.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
The day, the 31st.
Right. Right.
Report the death of Anthony Scaramucci's political career.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps telling the future, Harvard Law Directory. And we've heard about college athletes giving up playing eligibility to turn pro, but perhaps in a sign of the times, one college football player is giving up his spot on the team so he can make money on YouTube. Donald De La Haye is a place kicker for the University of Central Florida, and according to Fox News, he released a statement Monday saying that he did not accept the conditions of a waiver he received from the NCAA and has been ruled ineligible to compete. De La Haye, who was a marketing major, made several videos, some depicting his everyday routine and some that dealt with his experiences on the football team. Some of his videos had more than 50,000 views, though it's unclear how much money he's made to date from the advertising place based on them. NCAA rules prohibit student-athletes from making money off of their images. As a sophomore last season, De La Haye appeared in all 13 of the night's games as a kickoff specialist. So here we go. Because, you know, he's probably not going to turn pro, right, most likely. Not going to make any money that way. So he figures, you know, what the heck? Maybe this is a way I can... you know, I started a little entrepreneurial side job for myself.
Yeah, I like that. And could get his name out there for perhaps a marketing job when he's done. Or maybe he hangs his own shingle as a marketing expert when he graduates.
Right.
But this all, and he got 50,000 views, which is impressive.
Yeah.
This whole thing, though, of people making videos about their daily lives.
Yes. And people watching them.
And lots of people watching them. My daughter, for example, is watching the Jake Paul videos.
Okay.
All these guys do is you create these video blogs about what happens like in their daily lives.
Yeah.
I watch it and try to give it an honest effort to find out what is actually interesting, and the answer is nothing. But they're making a lot of money on doing these video blogs.
Yeah.
I guess I just can't relate. Good for him. I just can't relate. I don't understand the appeal at all.
How about the people that just play video games? You know what I mean? And they also get, you know, millions and millions of views too.
Yes. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to the Washington Post, reporting that President Trump personally dictated a misleading statement earlier this month about his son's meeting with a Russian lawyer in June 2016, which could place the president and some of his top advisors in legal jeopardy. The statement said the meeting between the lawyer and Donald Trump Jr. was about Russian adoptions. Later, Trump Jr. admitted the meeting was, in fact, regarding an offer of damaging information on Hillary Clinton. While not illegal in itself, the misleading statement could be used as evidence of obstruction in special counsel Robert Mueller's probe into Russian election meddling. Taking charge in an unruly White House, John Kelly moved in as President Trump's new chief of staff and immediately made sure Trump's profanity-spouting new communications director, Anthony Scaramucci, was shown the door, ousted after less than 2 weeks on the job, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
The president certainly felt that Anthony's comments were inappropriate for a person in that position, and he didn't want to burden General Kelly also with that line of succession.
Scaramucci had unleashed an expletive-laced tirade against senior staff members. It included vulgar broadsides at then-Chief of Staff Reince Priebus. Priebus was then pushed aside and replaced by Kelly, whose arrival led in turn to Scaramucci's departure. The Trump administration has hit Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro with financial sanctions following a weekend election that gave the country's ruling party virtually unlimited powers. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster.
The United States stands with the people of Venezuela in the face of this oppression. We will work with our partners to hold accountable all those responsible for the escalating violence and ongoing human rights violations.
The administration calls Venezuela's election a sham. Hoping to put closure on one of Chicago's most painful sports moments, the Cubs have decided to give Steve Bartman a World Series championship ring. Bartman, of course, was the fan who deflected a foul ball that appeared destined to land in left fielder Moises Alou's glove with Chicago five outs from the World Series in 2003. He was harassed after the incident and has avoided the spotlight since. The Cubs, which finally won the World Series last fall, says Bartman continues to be fully embraced by the organization.
That's impressive.
You like that?
But I'm not sure I like it, but it's impressive that the Cubs would do that.
All right.
6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. When a Colorado girl moved into her new home, she wanted backup when checking it for any possible monsters living there. So after meeting veteran Longmont police officer David Bonday at a community fundraiser, 4-year-old Sydney Farrenbrook invited him to her house. After showing the little girl his police car and even meeting her parents, the little girl made her request. Officer Bonday, a 13-year veteran, told ABC News she was worried there may be some monsters in the new house. Together, they checked the house's main level, including the living room, laundry room, and bedrooms, went outside to check the bushes. Officer Bonday even gave her his flashlight to help him look.
Man, you are super, super brave. This is awesome. You see anything under there? Take a good look.
Mom says daughter was excited when Mr. Bonday stopped by because she wants to grow up and be a cop. By the way, no monsters discovered on that search. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.